Chapter 21. "You know what?" I growled as I glared at the ugly fucker slobbering on the wax-sealed envelope with its nasty, creepy pincer mouth. "I don't even want to know."
"You don't, but Alex,"
Horace snorted. "It's no." I held my hand up so I could block his face completely from my vision. "No, no, nope, not gonna even go there until I finish drinking my Coley."
"Alex,"
he huffed, but I just slurped a long, slow slurp just to make a point.
"Really?"
"Yes, really," I parroted back and narrowed my eyes. "I was having such an excellent morning, and I don't care if your asshole father is plotting to assassinate the goddess by blowing up the freaking sun. I am going to finish my Coley."
"You might have to be the one to get the envelope from Igoric if you don't want to die of curiosity, brother."
A familiar, teasing voice sing-songed, and I whipped around.
"Shay, Zoe!"
I brightened at the sight of my two wives heading down the slope toward us arm in arm, and they were both radiant and fresh, like daisies growing through the permafrost of my previously wrecked morning. "What are you guys doing up so early?"
"We thought it might be prudent to come and check on you, seeing as how mornings are not a close friend of yours,"
Zoe said with a cute little smirk that told me she had me absolutely pegged.
"That might be an understatement, dear Zoe,"
Horace piped up and nudged me as I continued to savor every sip of the energizing lifeblood in my mug.
"Can one of you make him see sense?"
"Not likely,"
my catwife said and tickled my nose with the tip of her tail.
"Hey!"
I tried to catch that silken tail with my hand, but as usual, she was too quick for me. "I am a very sensible guy."
"As long as you're not up before the sun,"
Shay giggled in her sultry, umber voice. "As long as I have this to help me out," I bantered back and took another exaggerated sip.
"But that's the last of it, remember, Alex?"
Rye said, and my smile fell as I looked into my mug where only a few swallows remained.
"How will we get more?"
"Well,"
Bowden piped up from where he was sipping his own mug of Coley tea at a more sedate pace. "Once we finish the barn, the main center aisle should be big enough to store anything we mill once we get it all up and running.
But first, we really do need to address our unwanted guest,"
Horace said, and glared at the mantis raven still perched in the middle of the completed floorboards. I let out an irritated and gusty sigh as my mood deflated like a hot air balloon.
"I have an idea,"
Shay suddenly said, and grabbed my wrist to prevent me from heading toward the mantis raven.
"Why don't you let Zoe and I look at the letter so you can just forget about being the master of the manor for a day? And then later we can all discuss the contents and come up with a plan."
"That seems a little irresponsible of me," I said, even though the thought of just doing something like manual labor all day without having to think and plan like a duelist sounded like heaven.
"No one thinks of you as such,"
Zoe assured me and came close so she could lace her fingers behind my neck, and I held her around the waist with the arm not occupied with my Coley tea.
"Let your wives take care of some business for you while you make our home."
I hummed and nuzzled her face in the way I knew she liked better than kisses sometimes. Tempting.
"The letter isn't going anywhere, and it will still be waiting for you to deal with when the barn is done,"
Shay added, and ran her hand through the hair at my temple.
"Let us do this for you, darling."
"Okay, you talked me into it." I gave in and then smiled when both my wives cheered and covered me in hugs and kisses. "But Horace has to get it from that ugly thing. I'm not touching whatever Igoric is."
"It's a monger," Rylan interjected helpfully. "They often take shiny or valuable things and replace them with junk or garbage. They're annoying."
"Well said, nephew,"
Horace said, and his expression grew dark and hostile. "And they bite." The monger in question scratched its clawed foot against the wooden floor as if he was a bull getting ready to charge.
"Looks like you've got your hands full, H," I said with arched eyebrows. "Better get to it."
"Come on,"
the falcon man groaned as the black monger let out another weird chicken noise.
"That's the deal, Russ,
the phoenix woman chortled.
"For who? I didn't agree to any deal,"
he scowled but inched toward the disagreeable creature anyway, and it cocked its head and looked at Horace as if he was the irritating red flag flapping in his face. Then the mantis raven scratched the ground again and squared up with the falcon man as if Horace was an actual matador.
"Remember me, Iggy, you little scat kicker,"
Horace said in a Gucci Goo sort of voice. But I didn't think that was the best tactic to use with the nasty thing, because it hissed.
That's right, you miserable piece of... On second thought, maybe that was the point, because when Igoric hissed again, he dropped the letter on the ground, which then caused the Falcon Man to spring into action.
Bakaa! Bakaa!
The monger squawked as the Falcon Man chased it around, and I couldn't tell who looked more like a chicken with its head cut off, Horus or Igoric.
Uncle Horus, you look hilarious!
Ryland guffawed and then slapped his knee as he roared with gut-busting laughter. Just the sight of this 14-year-old cackling like a toothless southern grandpa on a creaky porch was so incongruous that I couldn't help but snort loudly until I, too, was nearly doubled over with my own side-splitting laughter.
Bakaa!
Igoric squalled and suddenly turned so he could charge at the Falcon Man.
Gah!
Horus yelled and leapt backward to avoid its pecking pincers.
You little...
He kicked out a leg in the pest's direction, and finally the monger flapped upward with its glossy black wings and let out an affronted thwip sound, as if it was sticking its metaphorical tongue at us and blowing a raspberry.
Roar!
Arvid suddenly bellowed right behind the aggravating beast and practically caused it to lay an egg.
Whack!
Igoric yelped and took off like a shot.
And don't you come back, you multi-bastard!
The Falcon Man shouted at the retreating shape of the Mantis Raven as it flapped away against the lightning sky.
You showed him, H,
I cheered, and then dissolved into more laughter when he straightened with his roguish grin and did a dorky bow as if he was Siegfried as well as Roy and had just tamed a tiger instead of a chicken.
Do you dance too, my lord?
Shay tittered as she held out her dainty hand.
If it pleases the lady, the Falcon Man bowed and kissed her on the back of her palm.
It pleases me thus,
Shay said with a snooty expression, and then she poked her brother in the ribs and tickled him. He laughed sharply and then stumbled back in shock, which caused him to fall on the floorboards with an oof.
Wow, I really feel the sibling love,
I joked, and Shay giggled as she helped Horus to his feet.
Tell me about it,
he said, and rolled his golden green eyes like every older brother who ever had a bratty younger sister.
Husband?
Shay said sweetly, and batted her long crimson eyelashes.
Remind me to tell you about Horace's 12th birthday. It is ever so delightful a tale.
No!
The Falcon Man screeched as his black-feathered crest fluffed up a little in defense.
We shall not be regaling anybody about that dreadful day, sister.
But what if I want to be regaled? I arched an eyebrow.
So, it all started when...
Shay began, and she was already animated with wild gesticulations.
Bon!
Horus clapped his hands down on the Phoenix Woman's shoulders, spun her around, and frog-marched her back in the direction of the manor.
We gotta get that bond done, sis. Oh, and here's the letter Iggy had. You and Zoe, see if you can make sense of it, will you? Report back. There's a lass.
Why, Horus?
Zoe purred.
It seems as if you want to get rid of us.
Never! But we've got a lot of stuff to do. Right, Alex?
He asked and made a shooing motion with his hands. I stuttered and decided to come to my friend's rescue, even though it was fun to watch him squirm.
Yes, we really do need to be getting on with this barn, but only because all of us are going to take a trip to Estate Number 2 later this afternoon. So everyone needs to pack what they want for a couple days.
Everyone?
The stable boy asked as he casually traced a pattern in the dirt with his foot.
Yes, you too, Rye,
I chuckled and hooked my arm around his neck and gave him a noogie.
You think I would leave you behind?
I broke a lot of vases last night,
he said, and then held his breath as if he was expecting me to suddenly shove him away and start yelling.
So you do remember,
I said, and then held him out at arm's length so I could scan him from head to toe.
Are you feeling all right?
Yes, Dad,
he groaned before he could really think too hard about it. And when he realized what he'd just said, he clapped his hands over his mouth and went pale. Good, I said, and just smoothed over what he called me as if it was neither here nor there. Make sure Prosper and the carriage are all ready to go, okay?
Yes, okay,
he said, and he started to look less like a deer in the headlights and more like my foster son.
Anything else?
Oh, yeah,
I said, and gave him a wide, shit-eating grin. Clean up the courtyard after you take Ben and Jerry out to the pasture, yeah? Actually, do that first so you can take a bath afterward. You're going to need it.
Aww,
he whined, and I just patted him on the back and pushed him a little in the direction of the manor after my wives.
Come on, darling,
Shay said to the stable boy and held out her arm.
Walk me up. My ankle is still healing, and I will need someone strong in case I lose my balance.
Yes, of course, lady. Miss Lael, she... I mean...
The poor kid stumbled over his words as he hurried to offer his gallant arm, as if she would fall over any second without his support.
Shay is fine,
she said graciously and looped her arm through his.
Okay, he said and puffed up his chest. Just be careful with all these rocks. The ground is quite uneven.
My grin softened into one of gratitude as my phoenix wife winked at me over Ryland's head, and I was glad she knew just what to say in order to distract the kid and make him feel useful and needed.
What a cute picture your little family makes, Horace slung his arm over my shoulders and sighed. I think I threw up a little but then swallowed it.
Shut up, I snorted and shoved his arm off me. Don't think this lets you off the hook, mister. I will hear that story about your 12th birthday one way or another.
What?
The Falcon Man gestured as if he had suddenly gone selectively deaf, and then turned around and walked over to Bowden.
What can I do? Put me to work, boys.
I shook my head at his ridiculous antics and followed him to where the Raccoon Brothers were just finishing up their drinks. I took it upon myself to gather all the mugs and set them aside with the clay pitchers while Bowden and Mel brought Horace up to speed with the plans. When I rejoined the group, we were all ready to take more instructions from the architect.
Okay, now that the floor of the barn is done, we need to make the four support frames that will form the main anchor of the building, Bowden said, and he scratched his forehead under the brim of his cap as he surveyed his hand-drawn blueprint again.
That way, if the walls fall down, the roof is still supported by these frames, Horace commented, and cocked his head to and fro down at the drawing. This really is a swell design.
Thanks.
The taller raccoon brother shrugged and cleared his throat as if he was shy about the praise.
the first thing we need to do is start with one of the long beams over there with two insertable ends.
Back where I'm from, we call that type of wood cutting a tenon, I said, and was amused at how basic physics seemed to be multi-universal.
Do your people have a name for the cavity on the corresponding post that the tenon fits into?
Horace asked me, and I was impressed he seemed to pick up the basic barn concept like a duck to water. It's called a mortise, I replied.
I like that your people bothered to label these parts with specific names, Mel said.
Thanks, Mel, I said, and I was oddly touched by the comment. I was finding the shorter raccoon brother was a man of few words, so when he paid me a compliment, I knew it was well thought out.
Good, good. Bowden nodded as he produced a stubby piece of something similar to graphite from the brim of his cap and scribbled notes down in his indecipherable chicken scratch. Keep the jargon coming wherever you see fit, Mr. Alex.
Sure, I said amiably.
Okay, first thing, everyone, grab a long beam or an anchor beam and lay them across the floorboards.
With my instruction, we paired off, each took an anchor beam, and set it down parallel to where the entrance would be so the H-bent was facing the front of the structure. After we did that, we had Arvid rotate the square beams so the tenons were parallel to the floor and the mortises were facing down.
All right, now we all get the posts,
Bowden said, and dusted off his hands as he led us to the longer yet thinner posts. On each end, there were tenons cut into the wood like the anchor beams. But on one end, the tenon was cut into a square, whereas the other end tenon looked like it fit into a slot-like mortise.
We're all going to have to work together to put the frame together, so let's first grab two posts and bring them to the first anchor beam. Arvid, can you gather two of the angled wood braces? We'll need them next.
Oh, sure,
the gentle giant said, and went about his task.
Now, I'm assuming two people have to fit the posts into the mortises in the floor while the other two fit the anchor beam into the slots designated for the tenons on each post all at the same time, correct?
I asked the raccoon architect.
That's correct, Bowden confirmed. The parts, once fitted, will naturally stay together, but we all have to slot them in at the same time. Arvid, you have the toughest part with the braces because they have to be fitted underneath where the post and the anchor beam meet. Don't be afraid to muscle it in there, big man.
Got it,
he said, and nodded his shaggy head as he held a brace under each three-clawed arm.
Are we ready to do this? I asked, and I received a bevy of confirmations from all present. Okay,
Horace and I are the tallest, so we will hold the anchor beam while I'm assuming Mel and Bowden will handle the posts.
Sounds good, Mel graveled out in his rough voice. Fit the anchor inside the post mortises, and then on your mark, we will all lift.
Okay, Mel, Bowden, my side is in, Horace said, as he lined the beam's tenon up with the post's mortise.
Me too, but Bowden, you'll have to come inward a bit when we lift, because my end is a little far from the mortise.
I'll make sure to aim it correctly, but try not to smash my fingers. I bent down in tandem with Horace and gripped my end of the anchor beam. On three, ready? One, two, three! We lifted the frame as one, and I huffed as I tried to line up my tenon before I had to let go of the anchor when the frame raised too far above my head. I was worried I missed the mortise when the beam started to sag, but at the last second, Arvid nudged the anchor up as he affixed his last brace, and the tenon found its home in the post with a satisfying thunk.
"How are you on your end, Mel and Horace?" the raccoon architect called.
"All good here," Horace called back.
"Okay, now, you and Alex hold the post upright while Mel and I climb up and secure the anchor to the post with wooden pegs through the holes in the tenons," Bowden instructed,
and the Falcon Man and I took our places holding the entire frame upright while each raccoon brother shimmied up and hammered a wooden spike through each end where the tenon poked out from the other side of the post.
"Wonderful," Bowden enthused when he jumped down. "Now, as long as there is not a breeze, this should hold long enough for us to erect the second frame. Once we do, then we can fashion the two frames together, and then nothing'll be able to knock 'em down."
"Nice," I said, and clapped my hands.
"Okay, team, let's do it again."
Now that we all knew how the parts for the H-bent locked together, the second frame went up a little easier than the first.
"All right, Arvid, come and hold the second frame, just in case," Bowden continued, after he jumped down from securing the anchor beam. "Now, everyone come over here and get these pieces of wood so we can bind the two frames together. We call these wall ties because it's like you're tying the two sections of the H-bent to each other, which reinforces the whole building," I said.
"Wall ties, excellent," the raccoon architect murmured under his breath.
"Yes, let's grab two wall ties and insert the tenons into the bottom mortises between the two posts. Then we will secure the ties with more wooden pegs."
When we had all finished with the ties, the H-bent looked like an overly large outdoor gazebo, and we were only half finished.
"You weren't kidding about its sturdiness," Horace remarked, as he admired the beginning skeleton of the barn and patted one of the posts. "Two more to go, eh?"
"Let's take a woot fruit break and then get back to it, team," I encouraged, even though we were all sweaty and tired just from lifting the massive sections of wood, and there were still piles of lumber we had yet to tackle.
The sun was higher in the sky, and even though everyone kept assuring me the winter months would soon be fast approaching, it still felt like summer temperatures. I took a seat on the ground next to the basket of ruby-red fruits and tossed one to each of my companions. After a short break, where we all bit into the weird, over-large strawberry-like fruits so we could drink the refreshing water pooling inside, we all jumped back into the grind and tackled the remaining two H-bent frames with relative ease.
"Yes!"
I shouted, and double-punched the air when the final wall tie was secured in place, and we had the beginnings of our center aisle.
"What's next, Bowden?"
"This next bit is for Arvid,"
the taller raccoon brother said, and took off his cap so he could wipe his brow.
"Okay, good fella, hang your whole body off the anchor beam so the posts can sink fully into the mortises on the floor."
Arvid nodded his shaggy head in understanding, and the rest of us spent another few moments watching the big sloth man dangle serenely from each anchor beam as if he was hanging out in a tree like his species implied. Finally, all the posts of the H-bent were set, and we all looked to the architect for further instructions.
"Okay, now, this gets a little tricky, so I hope you and Horace can balance," Bowden said to me.
And then he demonstrated where he was going with that train of thought by climbing up the first post. His brother, Mel, climbed up the adjacent post as if he knew what came next.
"Now, you both need to pass us up six angled wall braces and a long, flat plank that has 10 mortises bored under it that match the tenons at the top of our posts and our braces. These will go on top and create a surface that'll hold up the roof."
"If I remember correctly, that part is called the purlin plate," I threw out there, because it seemed to amuse the raccoon architect to have a plethora of new vocabulary words from a foreigner. Like learning to curse in German, I assumed.
perlene plate, he whispered giddily under his breath. Excellent. Yes, pass them up as well as a couple of mallets. You got it, I said, and then Horace and I managed to sort through the organized piles and quickly found the requested items for the brothers. Good, good, Bowden said, and rested the long purlin plate across all four anchor beams so there was a bit of a bridge to stand on. Now, wait for Mel and me to get the braces into the posts before you get RV'd to lift you and Horace up here.
What?
Horace gasped as his gold-green eyes flew open wide.
Up there? Hang on!
What's wrong, H? I squeezed the joint where his neck met his shoulder and rattled him around a bit. Afraid of heights?
No, that would be absurd,
he said, and casually flicked a piece of lint off his black tunic.
I'm afraid of falling from heights. That's a much more logical fear.
You'll be fine, Horace, I promise, I said, and patted his back. Arvid is a great catcher, a regular Yogi Berra, right, Arvid?
Yep.
The sloth man bobbed his head. Take it from me, I said. I was up on the manor wall and fell backward clean off the thing and would have cracked my skull open if it hadn't been for the big guy. You're in good, claws.
Yup,
Arvid added with a placid smile and then wiggled his aforementioned sloth claws in Horace's direction.
Really? Now that sounds like an interesting story. The Falcon Man rubbed his chin with a mischievous glint in his eye.
It's really not, I told him.
You fainted, you say? He asked with a smirk.
I wouldn't say fainted, I frowned.
Swooned, he needled.
No, I said. He poked my side.
Had a dizzy spell.
Knock it off, you goob. I shoved him away and play-kicked him in the leg.
Ahem.
The sound of someone clearing their throat halted our rough housing, and I looked up to see both raccoon brothers staring down at us with matching amused expressions on their masked faces.
I think we're ready for your assistance now, if you don't mind.
Sure thing, Bowden, I said through my snickering. Here, H, I'll go first.
Go for it, Chief,
he said, and folded his arms across his chest.
Can I get a boost, Arvid?
I asked, and the sloth man nodded as he knelt down. When he laced his big claws together, it created a perfect place for me to put my foot, and in one smooth motion, he lifted me up just like an elevator.
Great!
The raccoon architect said, and helped me stand on the anchor beam next to the first post. Now, Horace, have Arvid lift you up on the far post where Mel is.
All right, Arvid, I trust you. Let's do this, the Falcon Man said, and went to the back of the barn so Arvid could hoist him up.
Okay, now, Alex and Horace, grab each end of the purlene plate and hold it while Mel and I climb up onto your shoulders, Bowden instructed, as Horace and I lifted the long plank of wood. Then, once we're set, you'll both hand the plate up to us so we can line it up with the tenons on the top of the posts.
Ready when you are. How about you, H? I called down to the Falcon Man.
Good to go, Chief, he called back.
All right, Bowden, climb up. I'm ready for you, I said, and made sure my left arm was wrapped securely around the post before he scrambled up and balanced on my shoulders.
Now, on my mark, you will raise the plate so Mel and I can take it, the raccoon architect said. And lift!
Without breaking pace, Horace and I lifted the purlin plate, and before it was all the way up, I felt it being taken from our grasp as if we were choreographed.
That was satisfyingly efficient for some reason, I mused out loud, and Bowden chuckled a little from above me.
It is the Lenian method of building and machinery, he explained knowledgeably. Us Lenians have perfected a way to use our bodies in place of simple machines like pulleys so we can do away with unnecessary tools, and yet we don't wear out or overexert our bodies.
It's like Tai Chi meets Physics 101.
Neat. I gripped the post with both hands as Bowden adjusted his stance.
Okay, hand me the hammer.
He then reached down with one hand, and I was glad I already had the foresight to copy Horace and tuck the hammer in the back of my armored belt for easy access.
Mel and I'll finish hammering the plate down on top of the post and braces. Feel free to climb down and meet us on the other side.
Sounds good,
I said, and stepped down onto one of Arvid's broad shoulders before I hopped down to the floor. When Horace was also down, we both went over to the wood piles and gathered up the materials we needed for round two. From there, we operated like one mind, almost as if we all fell into some sort of synergistic harmony, and I wondered if this was more of that Lenian vibe Bowden was talking about. If so, it was pretty fucking awesome. In fact, it was so awesome, the longer we worked together, the less we needed to speak to each other. We naturally paired off in the most efficient way where Horace, who was taller than me, was working with Mel, the shorter of the two brothers. That left Bowden and I as the ones who most often took the reins, or initiative, of what needed to come next. Before I knew it, both side aisles were up and completed with wall studs that made up the outer right and left sides of the barn, as well as had a wall plate fitted on top similar to the purlin plate.
"Wonderful, simply wonderful, Mr. Alex, I must say!"
Jenner's voice floated over from the direction of the pasture where the koala man was leading the Porax, Ben and Jerry, over by their leads.
"I have been monitoring your progress throughout the morning, and figured you would be just about ready to raise the rafters."
"Your timing is always as perfect, Mr. Jenner," I said, and dipped my head in gratitude. "They will be perfect for what I think is coming next. Take it away, Bowden." "Yes, you will need the strength of the Porax to help us find the correct pitch of our roof," the raccoon architect said as he adjusted the brim of his painter's cap. "What will happen is we will connect the two rafters to form a triangle with an iron spike. Then we will fix each end of the angle to the Porax pointed in the opposite direction. Mr. Jenner, if you would, on my mark, you will instruct the Porax to start pulling inward at the same time." The raccoon architect then turned his attention to Horace and me. "Meanwhile, you both will make sure the rafters stay up straight. When the ends meet the top of the wall plate on the outer walls, tell the Porax to stop so Mel and I can peg them together. Does that all make sense, everyone?" A chorus of yeses made their rounds, and our efficient little team buzzed about with our assigned tasks like a well-oiled machine. The true test came when we were all in place to raise the first rafter. I was on the far left post of the H-bent stabilizing the rafter, while Horace stood on the same anchor beam on the far right. Atop our shoulders, we each had a raccoon brother, each waiting with hardwood pegs and a hammer to fix the rafter to the purlin plate before the lower wall plate. All we needed was Jenner to conduct the ox roaches, and our symphony would commence.
"Ready?"
the koala man called out. "Go ahead, Mr. Jenner," I hollered back.
"Yip!"
Jenner barked, and Ben and Jerry pulled the ends of the rafters inwards, with the harnesses fastened around their shoulders. Because the Porax were moving in opposite directions, the angle of the roof became more acute as the iron spike at the top acted as a hinge. When the end of the rafter lined up with the wall plate, Horace and I both yelled down to the ox roaches to stop. Then the Falcon Man and I held the rafters flush against the tops of the outermost walls as best we could.
"Got it, Bowden and Mel! Go!"
I ordered as my arm muscles strained, and my back twinged in order to compensate for the added unwieldy weight. Luckily, before the words could fully leave my lips, I felt Bowden leave my shoulders and watched him trek up the rafter like an expert tightrope walker until he reached the purlin plate. From there, the brothers got to work with their hammers, and Horace and I were leaping across to the next anchor beam to await the next rafter. In the end, there were 10 rafters in all, and by the time we were finishing the last one, the sun was high in the sky, and we had amassed an audience.
"Amazing!"
Shay cheered enthusiastically as her brother and I hopped off Arvid's shoulders and back on solid ground.
"It looks simply gorgeous!" "As well as practical and stalwart,"
my cat wife interjected from Shay's side. "Aren't you both a sight for sore eyes?" I said, as I walked toward them, and it was the truth. Both had changed into their day clothes, a pragmatic pair of tight black pants, armored skirt, and a Xena-like armored corset number for Zoe, and an ethereal Roman-inspired gown the color of sunflowers draped artfully around Shay's petite frame. They both looked good enough to eat, but that also might have been my stomach. The breakfast sandwich I had earlier was ages ago, and now that the bones of the barn were up, I was aware of the fact my muscles felt wrung out, and my stomach was protesting its emptiness.
"Mr. Alex," Mel said as he scurried down the H-bent, "I think Bowden and I can take care of the rest from here. All that's left is the doors and the side, and no offense to you or Mr. Horace, but our fingers might be a little more adept than yours when it comes to hammering."
"You will hear no arguments from me on that front, Mel," I said with a huff of laughter. I hated hammering, especially when I couldn't look forward to the entertainment a pneumatic nail gun could bring. "But are you sure you won't need us for anything else? I feel like we got this up a little faster than I was thinking. And don't forget, you both are more than welcome to come with us." Begging your pardon, Mr. Alex, but Mel and I would like to stay behind. The taller raccoon brother bowed respectfully. Although I do have a request. Anything, I replied, as I took a cloth Zoe handed me and wiped my sweaty face. I've been thinking about the greenhouse design you and Miss Shea have asked for. If you wouldn't mind going to the woodcutters again for another order, Mel and I can be here when it's delivered, and we can start on it as well as the mill. If that's what you guys want to do, then sure, but don't feel obligated to break your backs the whole time we're gone, I said. I hope you know by now I'm not the slave driver type.
We know that, sir,
Mel said simply, as he grinned up at me.
We want to.
Okay, whatever makes you guys happy then, I said, and then offered my hand to both of them so we could clasp forearms. Thanks to both of you. Ben and Jerry will definitely be all warm and cozy tonight, that's for sure. Huh, that they will, Bowden agreed. And when he took back his hand, he then handed me another paper to give to the woodcutters. Excellent. What's next? I asked, and turned my attention back to my wives and brother-in-law. Do we have time for a quick scrub down? I don't think I want to ride in a carriage with Horace smelling like a porax ass.
Speak for yourself, chief,
the falcon man snorted, as we all set off up to the manor house.
You smell about as pretty as manapilla piss.
Both of your odors leave much to be desired,
my phoenix wife said, as she shoved her way between her brother and me while Zoe looped her arm through mine on the other side.
It's true,
Zoe said with a small smirk. Both of you have too much sass, I swear, I said, and kissed each of them on the head. By the way, what was up with that letter? Shay and Zoe both slowed as they exchanged concerned looks, and I gazed curiously between the two of them as all four of us came to a stop in front of the manor's entrance. What is it? Horace asked the question before I could, as a stone sank into the pit of my stomach.
Alex, the letter is not good,
Zoe said.
There is much we must discuss,
Shay added, as her emerald eyes lighted on Horace and a knowing look passed between the two avian siblings. The pit in my stomach grew larger.